Okay, so we mentioned that there are two and perhaps three avenues by which we can understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up his universe, and therefore by which we can determine what is truthful. One is the Torah, another is the words of the Nevi'im, and perhaps the Mesorah that we have from the Nevi'im and passed down to the Chachamim. But both of those are rooted in revelation. And the third is the Seichel, the intellect, which is of course more rooted in analysis and in logic. So we're going to analyze each and every one of these avenues, and we'll start by just trying to outline the parameters of the use of Seichel. What role does logic have in determining the truth? Not surprisingly, perhaps, the Rambam seems to give Seichel the greatest weight. The Rambam writes that Seichel is essentially a primary source for understanding how God works. The truth is, the Rambam also believes that the Seichel is basically the tool that God gave us to interact with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not coincidental that the Rambam believes that the Seichel is able to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu more so than other thinkers may assume, because the Rambam believes that that's probably the point of the Seichel. The point of the Seichel is to allow us to get close to the divine. But he says in a couple places in the Mor Nevuchim Chelek Aleph Perek Gimel, Shemona Prakim, Rambam Perek Aleph, he mentions essentially his viewpoint on the Seichel, that it is, you know, it is the human capacity to perceive that which is beyond us, including to perceive things in the domain of the divine. So the Rambam sees Seichel as a legitimate tool for assessing what is true about God, about the world. That being said, even the Rambam can be differentiated from other philosophers or from secular philosophers through the parameters, the boundaries, you can say, of the use of Seichel. The Rambam has a very interesting discussion around Kadmut HaOlam, whether the world was created or whether the world has always existed. Now, this is something that in our time, interestingly enough, the religious school of thought and the secular school of thought is on the same page, that the world, at some point, the universe started. Of course, in the Rambam's time, this was not the prevailing theory. The prevailing philosophical theory was that the world always existed. It's not something that ever began at one point or another. And the idea that the world had a beginning point, that the world was, that you know, that there was a point in time, perhaps, where the world didn't exist and then did exist, was seen as strictly religious thought that did not conform to the enlightened opinions of the secular philosophers at the time. Now, the Rambam, who, you know, is known to borrow certain principles from secular philosophy, which we'll discuss, I guess, a little bit more in depth in a second, writes that we can't believe that to be the case. We cannot believe that the world always existed. We must believe that the world, the universe, had a starting point. But then the Rambam has to defend himself, because you always have the option to say, well, you know, those psukim, when I say you always have the option, I'm saying in theory, perhaps we could have said that those psukim that imply that the world had a starting point, perhaps they need to be interpreted metaphorically given what seems logical and reasonable, which is that the world always existed. Now, you might say, that's crazy. How could you ever interpret the, you know, a pasuk metaphorically, something that will see more in depth when we get into hashkafa of understanding Torah. But you may see, you know, that seems wild. That seems crazy. How can you suggest that? Well, the Rambam himself seems to do that because the Torah also seems to make it pretty clear that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has a body. How many places in the Torah make reference to a Kadosh Baruch Hu's body? To a Kadosh Baruch Hu's yad or zroa, right? The outstretched arm of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and the great hand of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which took us out of Egypt. That would indicate from the Psukim that Kadosh Baruch Hu has a body, and yet the Rambam is confident that those Psukim should be interpreted metaphorically, given the challenge of accepting, or given the, you know, the challenge that perhaps all logic or reason, or perhaps even our Mesorah, dictates otherwise. That Kadosh Baruch Hu has no body. So these, perhaps logic, perhaps Mesorah, are behind the Rambam interpreting Psukim that seemingly clearly indicate that God has a body. It motivates the Rambam to understand those Psukim metaphorically. And so the Rambam himself, he addresses this kasha, this question. He says, maybe you want to say that I should interpret the Psukim of the creation of the world metaphorically, because it seems more reasonable that the world has always existed, and I should interpret them metaphorically in the way that I interpreted God's body metaphorically. Rambam says, no, I'm sorry, we cannot do that. See, it would contradict some foundational ideas, of our belief system to suggest that God has a body. And so, because taking it at face value would contradict some yesodot of our emunah, we interpret the psukim metaphorically. But without that as a weight on the other end, you can't interpret the psukim. You can't interpret the psukim metaphorically. So, what we see from this piece of the Rambam, not really talking about our topic in terms of the seichel, but what we see from this piece is kind of this interaction in trying to determine, in the Rambam trying to determine what is truthful. We see the interaction of three different kochot. We have what's written in the Psukim, what seems reasonable to suggest, and what we have in a Mesorah. And they interact in a way where basically, you know, we can suggest things based on reason, right? As long as they don't contradict the Mesorah, the Psukim, unless we have a Mesorah to do so. So these three things really act together in limiting the scope of what we can suggest, even if logic may dictate that that is a reasonable suggestion. So we're, of course, even according to the Rambam, that you can suggest things based on logic, that logic has the capacity to arrive at what is truthful. That doesn't mean that there are no boundaries to what you can suggest through logic, right? The Psukim serve as a certain boundary to a certain degree, and our Mesorah serves as another boundary. And you can really only suggest something based on logic that already conforms to, or that does not violate, that which is clear to us through the Psukim, or through our Mesorah. So the Rambam does perhaps more so than anyone else attribute, give weight to the Seichel and its ability to determine truth. But even the Rambam, of course, has to accept limitations of the capacity of the Seichel not to suggest something that would defy our tradition. Now, it's possible that the Rambam's use of the Seichel is even more limited than we may assume. Right? We've just limited it to a certain degree. It's possible that it's even more limited than we may have thought. I want to share a piece that Rav Chagai London wrote in his Hakdama to a sefer, an elucidation sefer that he wrote on Rav Kook's essay L'Ma'alacha Yideu B'Yisrael. And we'll see its clear relevance very soon. So Rav Kook uses this word idea l'mahalach ha'ideot b'Yisrael, idea, which is fundamental, which is not a word, it's not a term in Lashon HaKodesh, and that calls into question why Rav Kook borrows this term as opposed to using a term that is Hebrew or a term that is in Ivrit. And Rav Chagai London explains that that's actually not what Rav Kook is doing. He's not borrowing a term, and that is evident by the fact that he is not using the term in his essay in the same exact way that this term is used in the language that it comes from. Rather, Rav Kook believes that idea essentially comes from the original Hebrew word dea, right? Dalet ayin, which has its roots, of course, in Torah, and it was inappropriately adapted into other cultures. And when we see, Plato discussing the concept of an idea in his theory of forms, he is essentially borrowing what was originally a Torah concept or idea and misusing it. And what Rav Kook is doing is restoring the term back to its appropriate use. So, I would suggest seeing that inside. This is Rav Chagai London in the Hakdama to his Sefer on Malach Ideo B'Yisrael, Seif Dalet, Hashimush B'Mila Idea. But he also, Derech Agav, mentions the following two points. First of all, this process of identifying ideas that are in their core Jewish ideas and then bringing them back into the Jewish lexicon. And he mentions that the Or Chaim on the Torah basically explains the psukim in the beginning of Parshat Ki Teitzei by Eshe Yifat Tohar as being a reference to this process. We're essentially Ki Teitzei L'Milchama, right? So you go to war and you find a woman who is held, you find a woman who is in captivity. So you are allowed to be with her, but there is this process that she must undergo where she's stripped of her clothing and of her hair and of her fingernails, and basically a lot is taken off of her, and only afterward, she's fit for you. So this is the process of Eshet Yifat Tohar. The Or Chaim explains that there's a deeper idea going on here, not just about a physical war, but also an ideological war. See, when you, Klal Yisrael, as much, or maybe even more, than we go up against other nations in a physical capacity, through physical warfare, we go up against other nations in ideological warfare. We are constantly at odds with the ideologies of our time, with the ideologies of those around us. We're in constant conflict with them. Some of our physical conflict only come as a product of our ideological conflict, which we see in Hanukkah, and our refusal to accept the Greek way of life. So he says, when we are at, not in physical battle, in ideological battle, you may find an Eshet Yifat Tohar. What's an Eshet Yifat Tohar? An idea that seems to be shayach to the other nation, that's basically a Jewish idea being held in captivity. And what do you need to do? Before you are allowed to take that idea for yourself, essentially create a union between Judaism and this idea, you need to strip it of all these externalities that have been piled on top of it by the nation that has been holding it captive. This idea that there may have been a Jewish idea that Greeks adopted and piled upon, everything they're piled upon, but at its core is a Jewish idea. And we need to strip it of all of its externalities before we can bring it back to our side. We can't bring it back to our side with all the inappropriate additions and changes that whatever secular society or philosophy made to it. We need to strip it down to its core, to find the Jewish idea, the pure Jewish idea in its root, and then you can bring it back into our lexicon. And says Rav Chagai London something fascinating, which I've subsequently heard people actually track, not just on an ideological level, but on a historical level, that this is something that the Rambam has done several times to Aristotelian philosophy. Not that he is logically analyzing Aristotelian philosophy or that he's reaching the same conclusions as Aristotle. Rather, what the Rambam is doing is identifying the core Torah ideas within Aristotelian philosophy, stripping them of the externalities, the inappropriate additions that have been made, and basically converting the idea back into Torah. So that's just another way of looking at what the Rambam does. So, it's true that the Rambam gives more weight to the use of Seichel, but even the Rambam's use of Seichel is of course limited by our Mesorah, of course limited by the Psukim, in what you can suggest, regardless of how reasonable it may sound, and could even be not always about generating an idea through Seichel, but simply about identifying through the Seichel what is and is not a Jewish idea, or more specifically, what elements of an existing idea are fundamentally Jewish and what are not. And that's not the use of a Seichel to generate something new as much as it is to discern what is proper Torah thought and what is not. And I'm not saying that's the only thing the Rambam does, it's just a different way of viewing his use of logic and assessment in determining what he believes to be true. Okay, so that's the Rambam, and what we need to do next is to examine the use of the Seichel through the perspective of those who have a far more limiting perspective on the appropriate uses of the intellect in determining truth.